The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hello, my name is Zachary Bennett.
And this is Tim Fakeless.
And we are your co-hosts for the Wolves Wired Podcast. Be sure to tune in to the Wolves Wired Podcast on Monday mornings. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Now back to your regular programming.
Back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. This is episode number 23. You can find us at Midwest Swing Pod on Twitter. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network at Cold Omaha MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me at Brandon underscore Warren. I am joined, as always, and I forgot to introduce you last week, Tom.
That's funny.
By Tom Schreier, co-founder of Cold Omaha. I think I got so excited to have Mike Berardino on last week.
It was a good conversation.
It was a really good conversation. I got so excited I didn't even introduce you, and you became that third voice in the void. And that it was a fun episode, but it just kind of got a little weird. I got one thing to read before we bring on our guest here. I got two cats at home. You know, I like to take care of them. So Pets Life, company that we've been partnered with, is a Minnesota pet care company that has created an oral care product for your cat or dog that is 100% natural, 100% safe, and 100% guaranteed to improve your pet's oral health. Save hundreds in vet bills and improve your pet's health by visiting PetsLife.com. That's PetsLife.com. Enter the promo code OMAHA, as in the second part of Cold Omaha, and save 20% on every online order. Or mention Omaha for 20% off any phone order. That's PetsLife.com, spelled with a Z. PetsLife.com.
Glad you take care of your cats.
Yeah, no kidding. It'd probably be a bad thing if I didn't. So on to our very special guest today. We got Mike Egziza from, let me make sure I get this right, formerly of Fangraphs, currently with CBS Sports. Mike, is that accurate?
That's correct, yeah.
And so where all have you written before? I know we worked at Fangraphs together for a stretch. Where else have you been, or where else? River Avenue Blues is, a very key one here, too, as well.
Yeah, and I also spent, 4 years at MLB Trade Rumors as well.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember your name from there. So the Twins, when they come home, have the Yankees, and, you know, it's, I don't think it's your older brother's Yankees, but we'll dive into that conversation a little bit while we have you here for 15, 20 minutes. But one thing, Mike, that I wanted to ask you about, and it's a little bit more of a broader scope. My wife and I had sat down, and we were trying to find something to watch the other night, and we watched a 30 for 30 on, I think it was called The House That George Built, and it just kind of chronicled building the new Yankee Stadium, going from the old one to the new one, and George handing over the baton to Hal Steinbrenner to take over the reins of the team. And I guess I wanted to ask you, now that we're, I think this is seven or eight of the Hal Steinbrenner era, what has been kind of the transition period, or what is different between these Yankees and the Yankees of his dad as far as what you've observed from your place?
You know, it's not as different as everybody seems to be making it out to be. You know, the George Steinbrenner of the 70s and 80s was a completely different animal than the guy we saw in the 90s and the 2000s. Remember, way back in the day, Steinbrenner would fire managers, it seemed like, you know, once or twice a year, and he would always give out big free agent contracts to try to make splashes and have big splashes and all that. You know, as he got older in the 2000s and stuff, he wasn't as involved. And Hal Steinbrenner is kind of the same way. He's much more methodical, I think, than his father was. He's a very rational person. He thinks things out. You know, he's not someone who's just going to, on a whim, say, okay, let's go sign this big free agent. And that's just not the way he operates. He's much more diligent about things. He likes to be thorough, think things over. You know, when Brian Cashman, the GM, wants to go out and acquire a player, he's got to go to the owner, make a good case, and convince him. And, you know, truth be told, every GM has to do that, but I think there's some more convincing now than there was when George was in charge. You know, a lot of people, they don't like Hal because the Yankees are not good, so it kind of goes to the top of the ladder, and they blame Hal for not signing big free agents and everything, but that's only a small piece of the problem, I think. Hal is he's a better owner than he gets credit for, and I think people are maybe not exactly remembering how the George Steinbrenner era ended these last, 10, 15 years.
And so are fans getting restless? And the reason I ask is there's one World Series crown in the new Yankee Stadium era. And a few playoff trips, one trip to the championship series with a four-game sweep. I'm trying to remember who that was at the hands of, but it's not coming to
mind. They won the World Series in 2009. They went to the ALCS in 2010, and then again in 2012. Yep. And since 2012, all they did was go to the wild card game last year, which, you know, they got shut out and lost, and like nobody.
Is that Keuchel?
You're not going to find a Yankee fan who was satisfied by that playoff appearance.
No. So are fans starting to grow restless, and do they pin that on Hal Steinbrenner or on Cashman, or are they understanding that, you know, there's a transition period here? I mean, again, I guess, too, you know, Robinson Cano left, and I think people were a little upset about that. But, you know, what's the general fan sentiment in New York right now for the Yankees?
Oh, no, there's definitely a lot of unhappiness right now. And I think this applies everywhere, really, because ultimately there are – The casual fan kind of dominates the market, and the casual fan wants the team to be good all the time. They want them to always sign the best free agents, no matter how realistic it might be. That's what they want. And when you're the Yankees and you have all this money, people want those big free agents even more. So fans are not – overall, they're not happy with the way the teams are going. And I think they're blaming like everyone. You know, they're blaming Joe Girardi, the manager. They're blaming Cashman and Steinbrenner. It seems to be blaming everybody but the players, and I feel like you kind of got to start with the players who are underperforming. You know, I think, you know, the Yankees have done an okay job of not being abysmal, you know, like not unwatchably bad these last few years. You know, the 2013 Yankees were one of, like, the most just awful teams I've seen in my lifetime. They couldn't score. They were not fun to watch, and they still won 84 games. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the worst season an entire generation of Yankee fans has seen, and that's not that awful. You know, this team is worse than the 2016 team is worse than the 2013 team, and you know, people are not happy about that. I think there are some that understand that they're trying to be respectable and trying to get younger at the same time, which is, you know, not an easy thing to do, but they're trying, and that's the direction they're taking right now. There's certainly some fans that want to tear it all down and rebuild, which isn't really not that possible. It's not like they're going to move some of these big contracts. And there's a segment of fans that just want them to sign every free agent and be good next year.
It's kind of telling, though, that the worst Yankees season in the last generation is 84 wins. The best Twin season in the last 5 years now is 83 wins. Yep. So, again, that just kind of gives you a difference of where these two teams stand right now as the Twins welcome the Yankees in for this weekend. What is the Yankees' identity right now? You know, you look at the stats from a distance. Offense is obviously not doing a whole lot. Pitching staff pretty much middle of the road. The bullpen expected to be strong. You know, the usual suspects are doing, for the most part, what they do. But from your standpoint there locally, what's the identity of the Yankees right now?
Geez, that's a good question. I'm not really sure. I guess, you know, when you watch the games every day, they talk about the bullpen more than they talk about anything. And specifically, they talk about three guys at the end of the game, Betances, Miller, and Chapman. You know, they just started printing out shirts for them. They have commercials for them. And that's really the identity of the team right now. The offense has been terrible this season. And it's you know, they've had stretches where they kind of beat up on some really bad pitching. But overall, they're having real problems scoring runs. The pitching started, I mean, April they were terrible, the rotation, but it's been much better of late. You know, CeCe Sabathia is pitching like an ace right now, which is basically the last thing I expected to happen this season. The pitching's been good. If they could just, if they could score some more runs on that, they would be at least in contention for a wild card spot. And as it is, I think they're like three games back, so, you know, it's not like they're completely out of the race. You know, there's no Derek Jeter, there's no Mariano Rivera, no one like that. So the identity of the Yankees is kind of, they're still searching for it, I think. And, you know, the bullpen is certainly the best part of the team that, you know, if they have a lead after six innings, the game is over. And I think that's the most exciting thing about the team. So that's what everybody's kind of identifying with right now.
Now, you mentioned the bullpen. I was wondering, they traded Justin Wilson in the offseason. What went behind, or what went into that? Obviously, young, cost-controlled arm, pretty good lefty. I know the Twins were in the mix, and in fact, the Twins thought their offer was better than Detroit's. Don't really know what the offer was because they're not going to specify or give us specifics. But what goes into the process to trade a guy like that when you've – I mean, I know they got a strong bullpen, and they spent a bunch of money or have spent a bunch of money on – you know, acquiring Chapman, who makes a lot of money. Miller's got a pretty nice contract. Was there just something there, or was it just a matter of trying to get value for him? What did you see there when they moved him?
Well, they, you know, they traded him to the Tigers for two AAA pitching prospects, starting pitchers, Luis Sessa and Chad Green. And the Yankees, I think they looked around free agency, saw Mike Leake getting $80 million, and Ian Kennedy gets $70 million, and realizing that we don't want to spend big money for mediocre pitchers, and we really don't have any AAA pitching depth. So we're going to take this good reliever, who is probably our fourth best reliever, and we're going to turn him into two AAA pitchers who could help us this year. And both Sessa and Green have both been out this year. Green's made a spot start. Sessa's been a long man for a little bit. This is just a matter of taking a position of depth in the bullpen, using it to address a weakness. And I remember hearing, you know, when we heard that the Twins made a play for Wilson, they felt they had a better offer. I remember looking over their system, and I was like, they don't really have the AAA arms to offer the Yankees. You know, it didn't fit. The Yankees they love their power arms. You know, Green and Sessa both throw really hard, and they're both capable of starting, and they were both capable of stepping right onto the big league roster if necessary. And I didn't really see the fit for the Twins there. Ultimately, it was just about getting that rotation depth, because the Yankees, they have one starting pitcher under team control beyond next season, and that's Luis Severino, who had like a 7 ERA this season before being sent down. So they needed rotation depth. They figure, you know, if we could trade this reliever, as good as he is, get two possible starting pitchers in this market, that's a deal we got to make.
Yeah, I guess my suspicion would be the Twins probably offered lower level guys, and maybe what they suspected to be higher quality, but just not fitting the needs of the Yankees. Specifically, and when you're not speaking the same language, that can be an issue. You did mention CC Sabathia, and I believe I saw somebody had tweeted, I think it might have been Sungmin Kim, that over his last like 8 starts, he's got the best ERA in baseball, like 0.75 or something like that. What has gotten into him? Because honestly, I think a lot of people were thinking wherever the Yankees were going this season, it could be with or without him, just because, you know, he was maybe going to be a decent number 5, but nothing more than that.
You know, the Yankees made him compete for his rotation spot in spring training. It came down to Sabathia and Nova. Sabathia outpitched him, and he got the rotation spot. There were 3 things, I think, that are different about Sabathia this season. He's throwing a cutter now. He stopped throwing his regular four-seam fastball. He's throwing a cutter now. So now he has something to get in on the hands of righties. And I mean, you look at his numbers the last few years, righties just destroyed him. So he had nothing to do, nothing to get them out. Now he does with the cutter. He's also using a new knee brace. You know, Sabathia's had a lot of knee problems the last few years with his right knee, so his landing knee. And, you know, in the past, every time he was landing up to pitch, he was feeling some pain, and that would it would hurt his performance. Now he's using this new knee brace. He feels comfortable with it. I think that's helped as well. And, you know, the other thing that I think is playing a role here is his sobriety. Remember last year he left the team, went to alcohol treatment place. He was away from the team in the postseason. You know, if the Yankees, they lost the wild card game, but if they would have won that wild card game and gone to the ALDS, they would have had nobody to start that game, because Sabathia would have lined up to start that game. Everybody else would not have been lined up. They would have either had to start someone on short rest or figure something out, but Sabathia left the team. And I think, you know, if you've ever had, you know, alcoholism in your life somehow, a family member, friend, or whatever, you understand it kind of takes over your whole life. And now he's healthy, he's sober, so his mind is clear, he feels better physically. I think that's helping him as well. I mean, how could it not? And, you know, nobody's talking about it, and I understand it's kind of like an uncomfortable thing to talk about, but I absolutely think that's playing a role. You know, Sabathia is not going to pitch to a 2.2 ERA all season. He's given up like 2 home runs in 60 innings, which is just not going to last all season, but I do think he's a much better pitcher this year than he has been the last few years because of the cutter, because of the knee brace, and also because he's sober.
That's great. You know, it's good to hear those kind of personal triumphs for a guy who, by all accounts, seems to be a pretty good guy. I want to ask you about a guy who the Twins are very familiar with, Aaron Hicks. The numbers for the season, not great. I know he stumbled out of the gates, which Twins fans are obviously familiar with, but what has been your take on him? I know some people have questioned his baseball instincts and that kind of thing, but through 52 games, almost 140 plate appearances, what's your thoughts on Aaron Hicks so far?
You know, I really wish we could see what he could do playing every day. He came into the season as the fourth outfielder, and the Yankees talked about playing him fairly regularly. They wanted to rest their regular outfielders and also Alex Rodriguez at DH, and they wanted to get Hicks. They wanted to get him something like 450 plate appearances, but it hasn't really happened because the offense has struggled so much that they've had to play their regular players. You know, Hicks, he had something like 20 plate appearances in April, and when you don't play that often, when you're used to being an everyday player, it's really hard to produce. And then when A-Rod got hurt, he spent like 3 weeks on the DL. They put Hicks in right field every day, put Carlos Beltran at DH, and Hicks played very well for those 3 weeks because he was in the lineup every day. And when A-Rod came back, he's back to playing once a week, and it's kind of tough to gauge what he's capable of. I think we've seen his throwing arm already. It's incredible. He's got sneaky power, I think. I think he's hit a couple home runs with the Yankees that were, I mean, they were bombs. They were not like cheap home runs at Yankee Stadium. And, you know, I've seen some people, like, same thing you said, question his baseball instincts. He made a bad break on a ball the other week, you know, it was a line drive. He broke back and it fell in front of him. And when something like that happens, kind of takes over the whole season and you make this one misplay and all of a sudden you can't read fly balls anymore the rest of your life. You're a bad defender. But that's not really... I mean, he's been fine in the outfield, and, you know, the Yankees, they just can't get him into the lineup right now, which is a problem because he can't stay sharp and play, and I don't really know what they have in him at this point. The Yankees are not going to – I mean, his numbers are not good, but it's not like they're going to cut bait and release him or anything like that. They just – that's not the way the Yankees operate, but at the same time, it's really tough for them to get him in the lineup. And you know, we haven't really seen, outside of those 3 weeks when A-Rod was hurt, we haven't really gotten any sort of indication what Hicks can do.
So there's a name you're very familiar with that's on the Twins right now making a push for the All-Star game, Eduardo Nunez. And I know, you know, you look at his numbers, the low difference between batting average and on base, the batting average on balls in play, probably a little out of whack. But in the last 2 years, you're coming up on 440 plate appearances with a 304, 341, 471 slash line. Not great defense at short, but I think he's tightened it up a little bit. Is there anything about this run for Nunez? It's 126 games, so not quite a full season. That makes any sense to you, given what you saw during his time in New York?
You know, Nunez always had some tools. You know, he makes a lot of contact. He can run. He's got a really, really strong throwing arm. The problem with the Yankees, he had with the Yankees is kind of what's happening with Hicks. He wasn't playing a whole lot, and when he was playing, he was bouncing around between second base, third base, shortstop, and I think not playing often and playing a different position whenever you do play, that was maybe a tough adjustment there. Yankees stuck with Nunez a lot longer than I think people wanted him to. You know, there was talk for a while that the Yankees considered him the heir apparent to Derek Jeter, but I mean, Nunez, he always made contact and he could run a little, and so he had some skills there. You know, his defense, I don't know how it's been with the Twins, but when he was with the Yankees, he had a knack for making just ridiculous errors that were, I mean, there's errors that are just kind of stupid baseball errors that happen, and then there's like ridiculous, hilarious errors, and he had a knack for like making these ridiculous errors that just, you couldn't help but laugh at, and I don't know if he's tightened that up, but because of that, nobody really trusted him at shortstop because he did it all the time. He would overthrow the bag, bobble grounders, fall over, things like that. Yankees eventually, 2 years ago, I guess it was, or 3 years ago, they finally said, you know what, this is not going to work for us. We can't keep waiting around for him. And he lost. The reason the Yankees traded him was because Yangervis Solarte had such a good spring training, and they decided Solarte is the better bet for their backup infielder spot, and that's when they traded him. And you know, the Yankees stuck with Nunez. They gave him some time. He got like 1,000 plate appearances with the Yankees. It just never clicked. I'm surprised he's hitting the way he is. I didn't think he'd hit for this kind of power ever. Mm-hmm. But there's, you know, he always did make contact and he could always run. So I had, you know, it's not totally a surprise that it's finally clicking for him as he's, you know, what is he, like 27, 28 now. He's kind of in the prime of his career.
Birthday's tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, it's not a total surprise that's clicking. He's been better than I ever thought he would. And it was a nice, you know, it made sense for the Yankees to move on with him, and the Twins took advantage, and they got a nice little player out of him.
Yeah, and Solarte, actually, former Twins farmhand, too, someone they're familiar with. I just got a couple things before I wrap you up. Are you still doing good on time?
I am, yeah.
Okay, so John Ryan Murphy, obviously, very, very poor start to the season. He's gone down to Rochester and very punchless for the first month or so, but in the last eight games, got almost an 1,100 OPS. He's on like a eight game hitting streak, and just starting to pick it up a little bit. Are you surprised he played so poorly? Because honestly, I know the expectations weren't high. He's never shown a ton of pop, but he's always been a decent little hitter. I know he took Glenn Perkins deep at Target Field last year, but honestly, I thought a guy with a semi-established track record would not have fallen apart like this, and it's just a little surprising. What were you expecting to see from him, and what do you think about him going forward?
Yeah, I've been completely surprised by Murphy. I've been one of the biggest Murphy fans really since he was a prospect. I thought, 2 years ago, I was like, this guy's going to be a starting catcher for someone soon, and the Yankees didn't really have a spot for him because of Brian McCann. He was the backup last year. He played really, really well as the backup. I thought he was going to go to Minnesota, and it would be like a month before he took the starting job from Kurt Suzuki. I just have no idea what happened with Murphy. And, I think there's at least some of it is just a function of going to a new organization and having to learn the new team. You got to learn the entire new pitching staff and things like that. And Murphy's always been a pretty good hitter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of a shock to see him hitting so poorly. And the other thing is he's always had pretty good plate discipline, and it seems like it wasn't there. He just didn't look like the same hitter we saw in New York, even just last season. He's still pretty young. He's a good defensive catcher. I hope anyway that he's going to eventually kind of snap out of this and turn it around. Unlike the Yankees and Hicks, the Yankees can't send Hicks to the minors because they're out of options. At least the Twins can send Murphy down, let him play every day, and that's probably that was a smart move given the start he had to the season. I was really, really surprised to see what Murphy did, and I'm still pretty high on him. I still think he's got the tools to be an everyday catcher at some point. I really have no idea what happened that season. It's the opposite of what I expected to happen.
Yeah, and he's impossibly young, or not impossible, but he's younger than people think. I got two quick questions before I let you go. As far as this year for the Yankees, the American League is crazy. I think we've well established that. Number of teams at or around 500, but not too many teams that are going crazy. Have you closed the book on the Yankees making the playoffs? And again, you mentioned that they're only three games out of the wild card, but have you closed the book on them having a chance to make a dent in the playoffs this season? Or is it just is a situation where anything can happen and you still have some optimism?
No, I think this is a situation where anything can happen, and they're still, it's only in the middle of June. The season is not over. And
sure.
You look at the next 11 games, the Yankees play the Rockies and the Twins, and that's it. And the Twins are obviously not very good. The Rockies are the Rockies. They never seem to be good. And the Yankees are going to, they've been hovering around 500 all season. And if they're ever going to get over 500 and stay there, it kind of has to happen these next 11 games. I don't think it's unfair to say they got to win 11. They got to win 8 of these 11 games to really kind of make a dent and get back in the race. And if they do that, they'll have a chance. Maybe they'll go out and get some help at the deadline, though. Really, in recent years, they haven't really done that. But, who knows what opportunities present themselves. It's certainly too early to write them off. But it's not early anymore. They need the offense to start hitting consistently more than anything. And if that happens, I think they'll, at the very least, they'll hang around in the race the rest of the season.
What does the trade deadline look for you? I mean, I'm sure a lot of that's dictated on how they play in the next 5 weeks, 6 weeks here. But if they fall out, obviously they've got some chips that they can cash in reliever-wise. Probably not going to move Betances just based on team control and all that. But Miller could bring back a lot. So too could Chapman. What do you kind of have for a framework as far as what you'd expect from the trade deadline for the Yankees right now?
I think Chapman's going to end up going, regardless of whether the Yankees are in the race or out of it. I think the Yankees acquired him knowing this was not going to be a long-term marriage here. They took advantage of an opportunity. He had the domestic violence thing hanging over his head. No one knew what to expect from the suspension, so the Yankees took the risk. They got him for nothing. Now that the suspension's out of the way, Chapman's back. He's pitching like Chapman. There's no... The little delay there hasn't had any effect on him. I think the Yankees realized that this is an opportunity. We could trade this guy for some real young players here that could really help us. We would be foolish to pass that up. We have other, if we trade Chapman, we're going to get back good players who could maybe help us win right now, not just in the future. We're still going to have a pretty great bullpen with Miller and Betances.
Right.
I think Chapman's going to end up going because it's just an opportunity the Yankees can't pass up. You know, they can't just get a stupid little draft pick for him after the season. They need more. Miller, I mean, Miller, the Yankees could set an extremely high price for Miller because he's so good. And you look at his contract, it's $9 million a year for the next 2 years, and that's a lot of money, but it's nothing compared to what he would get as a free agent. And I think every team in contention is going to want him. You know, the Dodgers are going to want him, the Cubs, the Nationals, the Mets. They could start a bidding war there, and they listened to offers last offseason, and I think they're going to listen to offers at the trade deadline because they'd be stupid not to. I would be surprised if he was moved, though, especially if they do move Chapman. I think they're probably going to hold on to Miller a little bit more tightly. But otherwise, aside from Chapman, there's not a ton the Yankees can do. You know, they might, you know, I could see someone maybe like Brett Gardner being moved if they decide we need to clear a spot for Hicks because they have other young outfielders in AAA they got to figure out what to do with. Gardner's one of their most tradable pieces, and they could conceivably move him without hurting the major league team much, if at all, depending on the return. Now, it's kind of weird to talk about the Yankees selling players, but that's realistically where they are. Even if they were to go out and add a piece, the lineup is pretty set, the rotation's pretty set, and there's always going to be injuries, but it's not like there's one specific hole they have to fix. And more than anything, they just need some of their players to start playing up to their standards from even just last season. You know, it's not like you have to look back 5 years for the last time they were productive. They just need their actual players to start playing healthy and start playing better, get healthy, and they just got to figure out what assets they want to try to maximize or hang on to.
Sounds awfully familiar with this local team as far as guys performing the way they're used to. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to your Yankees here as they find their way to Minnesota, and hopefully we can have you on again real soon. We really appreciated it.
Sure, absolutely.
All right, thank you. Hey, Tom, did you know that Cold Omaha and Amazon are partners?
I've heard of that.
Yeah, so anyway, coldomaha.com/Amazon can get you basically the usual Amazon experience, but we get a little bit of money as part of the deal, a little affiliate program. So
yep.
If you're going to use Amazon, and I know almost all of, if not all of our listeners do, coldomaha.com/Amazon is the way to go. It doesn't change anything about your Amazon experience, but we get to benefit from it a little bit. I've used it a couple times. It's extremely easy. You wouldn't even believe it. You could even set it as your homepage if it makes it easier for you to remember.
I actually used Amazon recently.
Did you use the affiliate program?
I absolutely did.
Okay, good. I have to remind myself, dude. I even forget, so it's understandable if people forget, but
yeah.
I try to remember.
I bought N64 controllers because I found my old N64.
When you moved?
Yeah, and so what I did not realize is that they were new, which is awesome, but they were also knockoff. So where you see the Nintendo, there's just no sign there.
It's a Pretendo.
Yeah, it's a Pretendo, exactly. It's a great. You played 64, right? The Ken Griffey Jr.
You
baseball.
Know, honestly, Nintendo 64 and Super Nintendo were the two I'd never had growing up. I have them now and have dabbled. And Ken Griffey Jr. is like the
right,
the one of the gold standards. I'm not going to say there's only one gold standard for baseball video games because there's layers. There's MVP baseball. There's
right.
For me, Sega Genesis World Series baseball. For a lot of people, there's RBI baseball. And there's all these layers. But Ken Griffey for N64 has a tier all to itself in terms of how great that game was.
Well, and you can play as the Expos, the Devil Rays. There's a few teams that aren't around anymore. I loved Paul Molitor's. You couldn't miss with him because his like little circle for his batting or
so
whatever.
Like the 100 contact or 99 contact.
Yeah, and that's all those guys that Terry Ryan was talking about recently that he kind of unearthed back when he was kind of ahead of the program, whatever. Your Radke's, eighth rounder, Hocking, which I didn't realize was a 52nd rounder.
A round that doesn't even exist anymore. In fact, A.J. Ochter pitched for the Angels last night. I think they said he went in the 46th. This year's draft only goes to 40 rounds.
Well, because usually those last rounds are either, you know, they'll take a football player or something like that, another athlete and try to...
Johnny Manziel went in the draft a few years ago. But no, did you see, they would take, or administrators,
like local kids and stuff. Yeah,
I was going to say, you know, if Terry Ryan had a son,
Yeah.
Ken Griffey Jr.'s son, Trey Griffey, went to the Mariners.
Torrey Hunter's son went to the Angels.
And they're both football players. In fact, Trey Griffey plays for the Wildcats of Arizona, and Torrey Jr.'s
He plays baseball at Notre Dame.
But I think he's just like a pinch runner defensive replacement. I don't think he plays a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe he does play.
I mean, it's probably an asset to have if you're that team.
Yeah, let's see if I can find Torrey Jr.'s stats. But no, it's interesting how that –
Well, I mean,
if
he just to get Brad Radke in the 8th round, even that alone is pretty surprising, but Corey Koski, 26th round. But yeah, it's kind of fun to look back and see kind of these. David Ortiz, for example, I believe he's one of his first years with the Twins. He's on that team.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it's LaTroy Hawkins, who, like, for the longest time I'd be like, I can't believe this guy is still in the league, because he literally is like in this N64, video game.
Yeah, he and Darren Oliver were some of the guys that were around the longest. Let's see, we find Torrey Jr.'s stats. 11 at-bats.
Okay.
He added 182 with 2 singles.
So he's a pinch runner.
And a 308 on base percentage. He did steal, let's see, how many bases did he steal?
I mean,
2 bases and 2 attempts. So I think it was just a goodwill measure, I guess.
Yeah, because, I mean, these teams... That's actually interesting. Some of these teams use, like, didn't Texas trade for Russell Wilson? Because I think Wilson was drafted by a different team.
The Rockies.
Yeah, and so they brought him to camp. Now, this isn't something you do with Manziel, but you do this.
Different guys.
Hey guys, want a drink? But, like, joke about that. He has an issue. But, like, you're not going to bring Manziel in there. But, like, a Russell Wilson, who's a proven winner and probably has something to offer in terms of maybe culture and stuff like that, or just kind of a cool thing for young players to see. I suppose there's some use for it. I don't, Michael Vick, you think he'd probably throw in the outfield. I don't know if he could hit, but some of these guys are good enough athletes. And you see it the other way around, too, where who's that guy the Browns took a while back, and he played baseball forever and then went to college, and so he was drafted in the, at age 29 or something like that. You see kind of these. Brandon Whedon, yeah.
And
so
actually, Wenke, what was his name? Wenke had done that too.
And he's a local, right? He's
Creighton.
Yeah.
Creighton. Yep. He was like one of the Mr. Baseball candidates or whatever back in like 1989.
Yeah. Yeah. No, his uniform is hung up in O'Gara's, I believe, in St. Paul. Yeah. Yeah.
So what was your takeaway from the MLB draft? I covered the first 4 picks. I almost said 4 rounds, but I think it was actually only, was it 2 rounds plus the competition?
And they were back to back, right?
Yep. And so we covered 4 picks extensively on coldomaha.com. Check that out. Just got to dial back a couple days. What was your take of the Twins draft? Again, it's screaming into the void a little bit, because it's MLB draft is so hard to really evaluate 1 week later, 1 year later even. What was your thought? And I'm assuming you read the piece, so what did you think overall?
I mean, I think the interesting thing with the draft is I don't know if you're really addressing needs as much as you're they're looking for best player value.
Terry, a certain scribe that has been on our program asked about drafting for need versus drafting for best player. And Terry flatly said, best player. And he got proud a little bit and he said, best player. Absolutely flatly said, best player. He said, we've seen teams in recent years, and he said now that actually he suspects 30 of 30 teams draft for best player on their board.
Yeah.
But he said he's seen in recent years where teams have drafted based on need and it's blown up in their face. And I'm thinking what he's probably suggesting is, maybe Mark Appel going first overall to the Astros. And again, Appel was taken 8th overall the year Buxton was taken, and was a guy that the Twins were supposed to be in on.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, when Buxton debuted, Buxton as a high school player debuted when Appel was in AA. Now, granted, Appel went back to college and then got drafted first overall the next year. So he got drafted, I think it was the Pirates the first time around.
Yeah,
and
that's
it was the Astros the second time. Buxton beat him to the big leagues. And everybody would have not even looked at Buxton if he was drafting for need. I think another one was Mike Zunino of the Mariners. He was, I think he went to Florida. I struck out like 30% of the time in college. And the Twins were starting to be close to needing a catcher. Now, that was 2012. And so Maurer still had a year plus of catching left. But yeah. There were already whispers about moving Joe off catcher, or there was already ample columns of people saying, hey, you know, what are the Twins going to do here? He's got to stop catching before too long anyway.
Yeah.
Twins could have drafted for quote-unquote need there. Zunino's at AAA Tacoma right now. I haven't looked at his numbers lately, but he struck out like 47% of the time for a very extended period of time catching for the Mariners. So, I mean, drafting for need just doesn't happen. Now, this high school kid that the Twins took is playing for his state championship here, I think, on Thursday. His team's 24-0. 25-0 would be the state title, and then the Twins would get him signed and ship him off probably to... You know, they made it sound like he was going to go to the Appalachian League, and that's the more advanced rookie league. Darren Johnson said his swing is advanced. He's an advanced offensive player. So I'll be interested to see where he lands. They did get the second-round kid, the Rourke vet from Wisconsin, signed, the high school catcher. Little guy, but a big power, good bat, good arm. That could be an interesting pick, too, because you need catchers in your system, and they need that long-term catcher.
Well, and so one thing I noticed, and again, this is listening to people who are better baseball minds than me, is that Kirilloff was basically the consensus 15, and it's kind of funny that shook out that way.
I saw a number of mocks that had him right at 15 or 16. Only one person, it was Chris Crawford, who I had actually planned to have on the show one time, and he wasn't feeling so good. And a mind I definitely trust, he had Kirilloff not in the first round at all.
Really?
But most of the places I saw, 14 to 16, and Keith Law even said all the pre-draft steam that he heard that the Twins had put out, high school arm, high school arm, high school arm, or Justin Dunn, the Boston College right-handed pitcher, who I asked around. Sounds like he's 92, 93, throws strikes.
I mean, Dean loves him, which is biased. But I mean,
it sounds like another Scott Baker, which wouldn't be a wasted first-round pick. You'd have a guy get to the big leagues quick. But if you've got a possible generational talent outfield guy from high school or a fourth starter, there's no wonder why teams draft that way. You draft the higher-end talent.
The crazy thing to me about this is with the MLB draft, first of all, I think they're trying to get it promoted. They shouldn't do it during games. I mean, they should have its own day or whatever in MLB if you really want people to watch it.
You mean the first day anyway?
Yeah, yeah. And I think, I mean, after that, you'd have to really be inside baseball to understand what...
So how would you do that? Would you make it during the All-Star break?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, otherwise...
That's late in the summer. Guys don't get signed and get out to their affiliates, though.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, maybe there's no other way to do that. But the big issue is that even if you did it perfectly, it's just not... There's no Carl Towns, or that'd be really rare to have a guy just step into the, you know MLB and be an impact player.
No, I mean, who's the closest? Mike
Leake. Well, I mean, Mike Leake went right to the majors, and I think has only played two minor league games.
Okay, yeah, I remember Leake being very, very quick. There are some guys that didn't play in the minors at all. John Olerud, I think, didn't play in the minors at all, but that's a little bit, a while ago.
Yeah.
But Chris Sale came up pretty quickly.
Which doesn't surprise me.
Rodon came up pretty quickly. The White Sox obviously moved those guys
pretty fast. And Harper and Trout went right through the systems. But, you know what I mean?
As young guys.
Yeah. And, I mean, Maurer for that reason, too. I believe he got hurt, right? But he kind of went through that system pretty quick.
He was drafted 01, debuted 04, so pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, the issue with this and what fascinates me about scouting, and I try to talk to Terry about this as much as possible, and he will talk on and off the record about a lot of these players. How do you have a consensus 15 guy when you're comparing, this guy in the suburb of Pittsburgh versus this guy in Florida versus, Buxton came out of middle nowhere Georgia versus, whatever. I mean, it just seems funny that I understand that they have these perfect games and these kind of, they bring these talents together.
Circuits.
Right. And I suppose that's when you kind of parse people out. But the level of competition has to be so different, and then you're comparing that to a guy in junior college. And I believe you only have to go 2 years, right? And then you can get drafted out of junior college?
One
year? Okay.
Because Groom, who might not sign with the Red Sox, could be back in the draft next year. There's been some talk about if the Twins draft one or two, he could be in that conversation.
So you have that, and then you have to compare to, which I think is a good system, you have to stay 3 years if you go to college.
Yeah.
So those guys are leveraging their fourth year against the teams to try to get more money. But trying to compare a guy at Stanford compared to, Justin Verlander pitched at Old Dominion, right? And you have you just have these kind of random schools that these guys go to. And I think it's fascinating to me, kind of the behind the scenes. I guess the one bone to pick or whatever is I do know some people at Coon Rapids love Logan Shore, who went 47th, I believe, and I believe it just was a matter of, because it seemed like the Twins were high on him, a matter of they just didn't have a pick in that range, right? They picked like 57th or something like that.
Sixth, I think it
was. Okay, and so...
yeah, the A's got both the Florida pitchers, Puck and
Shore. Yeah, and so, and it sounds like he has a lot of upside. I mean, again, the people I talked to are biased.
Like, sounds like Shore throws 89 to 92 and is a pretty safe bet to make the big leagues. Puck is a little bit higher end, but, you know, Shore started Fridays, and I think Puck started Saturdays. It's just how Florida's rotation lined up.
Yeah, and I mean, part of it, too, is, look, we learned with Chargois, for example, he was operating in 97, 98. Alex Meyer throws pretty hard. Throwing hard doesn't necessarily mean success in the big leagues. You have to have off-speed stuff. And maybe this is a flaw in my thinking, but sometimes those are the guys that blow out your arms, where if you have a guy who maybe sits in kind of the 90-92 range, which is a major league fastball, but not probably your premier pitch, but you have the off-speed stuff, you attack the strike zone, you have, you know, pinpoint control, those guys maybe have more sustainability long-term. It's really hard with the pitching. Throwing's not a natural motion. A lot of these guys get hurt, but I don't know. I mean, it's really hard for me to say how the Twins did in the draft, because we won't know for years. And even, you know, we asked Terry, like, how do you evaluate the last five? And he goes, give me 10. Now, a lot of people do that just to... but look, Cole Stewart was looking like he was in trouble, right? And he's doing well in Double-A, to my knowledge.
I mean, he's been okay, but he started out in Fort Myers and pitched very well and deserved that promotion.
Yeah, and Tyler Jay was supposed to be... I feel like he was supposed to come up pretty quick, and he's still in high A, right?
Well, the deal was that Jay was going to move quickly as a reliever if they
needed him. Right.
And he's been moved to the rotation and has been dealing for Fort Myers. He might be the next one headed up to Double-A.
And then you just see a lot of these guys get kind of trapped. I think of Trevor Plouffe, who went to Triple-A really quick and then kind of took a while to get to the major leagues.
And then the big leagues took him a long time, too.
Yeah, I mean, and so, you know, people go, well, that wasn't a great pick. I go, anytime you got a guy in the first round who can be an impact player, I think you actually made a good pick, especially when you're in the 20s. Like, you know, now we're talking with the Twins outside of this 15th pick. I mean, five of the last six seasons, basically, assuming this will be a losing year, we'll be losing seasons. You know, you have to look for higher impact players then, you know, as you get up there. But, you know, for a lot of these guys, you know, Aaron Hicks, if he turns out to be a player of any caliber, you go, hey, look, at least your first rounder made it to the big leagues. And that sounds like a really low standard, but it's just there's kind of these a little bit of crapshoot. And the crazy thing is they may get, you know, I didn't realize this until I saw a story on this, Chargois and Duffy played together, and they're both not high picks, right? It was like third round and sixth round or something like that.
I think Duffy was, he was a bit later and was a reliever, too. He wasn't a starter at Rice.
And so you have to look at, okay, not only how did you do with the first and second round picks, those are important, and that's why we did this. You did a great job with this big feature, which I encourage people to go read, but you also have to look at, and we won't know looking at, you know, who they drafted this year, but how did they do in the sixth round and how did they do in the fifth round and this? Because that's how you fill out a team. And my belief always is if you have this concentration of talent in the minors, those best players will be that much better because they'll play on competitive teams. They'll have competition for roster spots, all that, earn their promotions and all that.
Darren Johnson, the team scouting director, too, said there's a unique challenge to evaluate players that play in areas like Byron Buxton, like Alex Kirilloff, and
right,
because they play against lesser talent. Now, again, there's the showcase circuits and all that, and Kirilloff showed he had that physical gift against higher velocity once he got used to it. So it'll be interesting to see how he acclimates to short season ball here. I'm assuming he'll go to – I'm trying to remember what the Appalachian League team is, because there's Elizabethton, which I think might be the Appy League, and – you know, if they believe his bat is that advanced, you know, he can jump right in there and hopefully, obviously, be an asset as far as helping them offensively.
Well, and the truth of all this is that as long as you can hit, there's a spot for you in the major leagues, right?
Basically.
I mean, it tends to be that the guys who can't hit, even if you're a great defender, you think of Hicks or Buxton. When Buxton was struggling, you have to put him down because you have to hit about 200. But
I don't know about put him down. Send him down.
Send him down. Sorry, that's not.
Yikes.
It's a tough game. No, yeah, so I don't know. And I did.
E-Town is Appalachian League, by the way. So.
One curiosity I did have, and I haven't found an exact answer on it, but I asked Pat Dean about it, and I actually asked Terry about it. Why you have the, you know, we talk about how popular the Yankees and Red Sox are, right? Big populations and all that. And it is interesting. I mean, I guess it makes sense that, you know, Texas, Florida, California are your big hubs, and Georgia as well, because you have warm weather, big populations, a lot of competition. You also may have situations where people grow up elsewhere, and, you know, if they see their kids really good, maybe go to high school down, you know, in Florida or California or whatever. So there are explanations for it, but does it surprise you at all that, I mean, we look at Pat Dean, he's from Connecticut, went to Boston College. Ryan O'Rourke was recently on the team. He is a Massachusetts native, Colabello, but that's not a typical story at all. And I'm trying to think of how many players they've had that have New York or Boston ties. Does it surprise you at all, given the size of the population and how popular baseball is there, that you don't see more players, you know, coming from out there?
I mean, I do think the weather affects it a lot, and you know, there's also the specialization, guys that play just one sport versus multiple sports.
Right.
I don't know how that plays into it, but yeah, New York City is huge. Playing baseball in the Bronx, that's supposed to be a big deal. You know, all the little league teams, yeah, and all that stuff, and Boston as well. I think it really does boil down to weather and opportunity, because kids that get to play all season long or all year long and the same sport, which is, I don't think, good for the body's development. Those kids get to the big leagues.
Yeah.
I would have to look at the demographics to see what, you know, how exactly it breaks down. You know, if 60% of players are from those big states, 20 are from the, you know, East and Minnesota, and then another 20 from the Dominican. I don't know how it would break down, but I suspect it would be a lot less. And it is surprising based on the number of people that live in those areas. You'd think just out of sheer
The math
demographics math that it should pan out.
One thing for the Minnesota angle is, I guess, you know, in the Midwest, Minnesota does really well, as we just talked about with Shore and whatnot, and obviously with Maurer and Perkins and the guys you've seen through the twin system. Compared to the Midwest, I guess Michigan's a little bit better, but they do better than Wisconsin.
Where Jeter's
from. Yeah, right. They do better than Wisconsin and Iowa and
Wisconsin,
the Dakotas.
Wisconsin has a very, very poor record. In fact,
which is funny that they got a catcher from Wisconsin.
Not to interrupt, but there had been like one player with regular big league experience in the last like 50 years that was drafted as a high school out of Wisconsin.
Yeah, and so I guess also in the southern states, you probably don't have as much competition from hockey. And we know out east too that, you know, basketball is really big, especially mm-hmm. New York. So, you know, there's a lot of different factors. How many kids who were really good baseball and hockey players chose hockey and went that route here in Minnesota or Massachusetts or whatever. So, I don't know. I find the draft very interesting, but it's really hard to tell. It's not a football draft. It's not like, you know, with Arif and Luke, they come in here and they'll tell you, you know, Willie Beavers wasn't a good pick and Treadwell was just fine or whatever.
300
you know?
Million people will listen to it.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not bitter.
But you know, you see the point is that like the draft is compelling itself. It's really hard, even as someone who, I enjoy college baseball. Actually, I don't tune into it as much until it gets to Omaha. But
crunch time.
I think it's really fascinating. Did you put it on your Facebook? Texas
A&M and TCU.
Just to explain this real quick, and then we probably should wrap this up. If you throw a 4-pitch walk, they start chanting ball 5.
They go one up on whatever you've done. Can you imagine anything more daunting?
Why is this not more common? It's so awesome. He threw the guy off. He threw a pitch way up and like over his catcher.
It's a college kid on the mound too.
Yeah.
You have got to be wanting to just climb into your jersey and do the turtle thing and put your head in the ground like an ostrich and hide.
It's legitimately scary.
It sounds like they did it to Minnesota too.
Really?
I listened to the audio and it said that they did it to Minnesota and he threw like 11 in a row.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. So it's all coordinated. They all stand up. They all point in their hands, yelling ball 5, ball 5, ball 6.
And the transition with each pitch is seamless.
Yeah, no, and it's if you haven't seen this video, definitely check it out. It's I think college, people here understand hockey because it's so big. I'd say it's kind of the equivalent. It's not as big, obviously, as basketball or football, but it is. It's fun to watch. You see quirky little things in the college game. Plus, you get to see players who, again, not immediately, but potentially will play in the big leagues. But you'll see quirky little things like that you won't see because of the intimate environment and because, you know, again, some of these college teams don't come from big league markets and stuff, so they kind of have their own vibe.
Quickly, before we wrap this up and get to our very, very important business meeting.
Yeah.
When do you suspect the Twins will bring back Murphy to do some more catching? Now, it's interesting. John Ryan Murphy is younger than Mitch Garver. who's catching at Double H Head. He's about the same age, maybe a little. He's actually a little older than Stuart Turner, the defense first guy. That's also, I believe, at Chattanooga. So the idea that we should just give up on him as people that watch the Twins or you know, as far as fans have started to give up on him, is just hilarious. 8 games in June. Granted, he hasn't played in the last couple days. He's hitting 370 with a 438 on base and a 630 slugging percentage. Home run, 4 doubles. So 5 of his 10 hits have gone for extra bases. I wonder if the time isn't going to come where the Twins just hand it over to him.
Yeah.
You can send Centeno back, or Centeno. Centeno's done a fine job, and I think he could be a future backup.
Right, I think that's right.
But it's time to really figure this Murphy thing out. And how much longer do you need to run Kurt Suzuki out there? You could probably trade Suzuki for a C-plus
Yeah, that's
prospect.
The funny thing.
You probably could get... I'm serious. You probably could still... You might have to eat a little money, but you could probably get a body for him. I think it's just time to figure out what you got. Just my 2 cents. Where are you at with Murphy before we...
I think it was really encouraging to hear the Yankee side of things, that they expect him to do well. I've always argued you probably should have signed a guy because you just need bodies, and it'd be nice to have Hicks even as a defensive player, but it seems like they could win this trade. And the bottom line with a lot of these guys is they just need to kind of show up and play, because look at Robbie Grossman on no one's radar screen. People kind of, he was starting to get the journeyman label or whatever, comes up.
Berardino called him Robbie Hobbs last night. Too funny.
You know, I think the thing with him is that he came in and took a job. Nunez, even if Nunez gets traded, Nunez came up and showed, hey, I can do something in the major leagues. Mm-hmm. These young guys, I understand time's on their side, but it's got to be in the back of their mind. This is an opportunity for me to cement my place with the Minnesota Twins or in the big leagues for years to come. So, you know, if you're Murphy, I think it seemed like it was a mental thing, and it seemed like whatever it was, he got over that hurdle, and you hope that talent takes over from here, especially when the Twins need a dependable everyday catcher.
Well, you said you would have signed someone. I'm telling you guys as I close the show, I would have signed Salta Lamacchia.
Okay, good. Just, yeah.
Bad first guy, no defense, but at least you've got something. So that's been it. That's going to be a wrap for episode number 23 of Midwest Swing. A big thank you to CBS Sports' Mike Agzisa, of also River Avenue Blues, big Yankees fan. Did a great job in the first half of the show. Thanks, Tom, for producing, and for everybody here at the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Check us out for Midwest Swing next week. I believe we're going to have Mike Berardino back in the house. So
yeah.
That should be fun.
Listen to the Andy Luke and Reef Football Machine, starring Arif Hasan.
Hi.
And Luke Idman.
He's back.
And Andy Carlson, who's also a person. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and coldomaha.com/machine, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
What's up? It's Sam Ekstrom, host of Don't Dread the Spread on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Sports betting talk for the average sports fan. Turn your nickels into dimes. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or on Twitter at Sam's Sports Picks. Come join the fun.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out ColdOmaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@ColdOmaha.com or follow us on Twitter at ColdOmahaMN.
The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.